1 Kings chapter 19. We'll get to some serious things this morning. So I missed you, everybody, last week, because this lesson I have been looking forward to with great expectations. It's a great passage that I think is very applicable and can be helpful to many. But we've been seeing some great things in chapter number 18. Really, Elijah had a mountaintop experience. You know, literally a mountaintop experience. And I believe if you've been saved, you've had a mountaintop experience where you've met Jesus and he saved your soul. And that's really something that only God can do. You know, I can't wash away my sins no matter what I do. I can't get rid of that. It's only through the shed blood of Jesus Christ that can take that away. And maybe since then you've had some times where you've kind of been up on a mountain and been close to God. I remember a Thursday during teen camp down in North Carolina, and the Spirit just moved right in. I will never forget. I was probably 14 years old, but I will never forget that evening. And then a few other times down there at some camp meetings, and exciting. Just it's like God is right here, right here amongst us, and that's such a blessing. But then we see where Elijah came down off the mountain, and then he ran to Jezreel, about 17 miles away, and he was the forerunner to Ahab, kind of leading the way. Hey, Ahab's coming. He's got a different message. He's got something to say, and things are going to be different. But albeit for just a short period of time. So let's look here in chapter number 19 in verse number 1. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done. So Ahab comes from Jezreel, he comes to Jezreel, where they're living at the time, one of the capital cities, and he gives Jezebel the report of everything that had happened. You know, Jezebel wasn't there. She wasn't at Mount Carmel. She didn't see all the people gather. She didn't see the altar being built. She didn't see the prophets gather around and pray and beg for fire to come down for hours and hours and hours. She didn't see Elijah prepare his altar, soak it with water, and then pray and really create an impossible situation. She didn't see that, and then she didn't see the fire come down from heaven and consume that. She didn't see any of that. But here Elijah is reporting that all back to her. Jezebel should be convinced that the Lord, He is the God. She should be convinced of that, but she's not. Let's continue in verse number 1. And withal, how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, so let the gods, that's little g gods, that's the gods that she worshipped, do to me and more also, if I make not thy life as one of them, by tomorrow, about this time. She gives Elijah, 24 hours, basically. You know, I always think of like an old Western. You know, you got till high noon tomorrow before, you know, you're done, before you're going to be in Boot Hill kind of thing. So, you know, I'm coming for you. I'm coming for you. Verse number 3. And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life. You know, we would say he ran for his life, you know. And came to Beersheba. Beersheba is in the southern portion of Judah, of Israel. So they're up, they're up near, here's Megiddo. Remember when I did the presentation, and it's over the Jezreel Valley? You'd also call that the Valley of Megiddo. They're up here, so he runs down to Beersheba, all the way to the south. All the way to south of, this is in Judah. You know, at this time the nations are divided. So up here is Israel, down below is Judah, runs all the way to the south, down to Beersheba. Which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. So he gets all by himself. You see the clear distinction between chapter 18 and chapter 19. And this morning, I'd just like to look at these verses and a few more with the thought in mind, the crushing weight of a failed expectation. The crushing weight of a failed expectation. Have you ever had an expectation? Something that you expected something to go a certain way. Maybe maybe you have a job, or you're looking for something, and God gives you a job, a new one, and hey, this is going great. God is providing, God is blessing in so many ways, and then all of a sudden that situation gets turned on its head. And it's like, whoa, what's going on here? God, I thought you were blessing and providing here. I was expecting you to do this way, but then everything gets changed. I was so sure that God was working in this particular way, and now I don't understand what's going on. God, you were blessing, you were leading, at least I thought you were, and now I'm over here and this mess is going on. We saw Elijah in chapter 18. He saw some great things. I mean, he literally prayed down God's power from heaven and consumed the altar. And now here in chapter 19, his life is threatened. God, where are you? I thought what happened over there on Mount Carmel was going to carry on here in Jezreel. And it's not happening. God, you persuaded Ahab's heart, but Jezebel, her heart isn't persuaded at all. She's against the whole thing. She's not admitting what's going on. She doesn't believe that you had worked. I'm so disappointed in what's happened. In chapter 19, it seems like God isn't helping at all. His expectations have fallen. And that's happened to me. I'm sure that's happened to you. We've all had expectations that weren't met. Boy, I was expecting this to happen, and I was thinking, just in a very practical terms, we have the Pine Derby coming up in a little less than 2 months. And I remember a couple years ago, I was working on the girls' cars real hard, and I was testing them out in the morning. I had spent hours and hours and hours working on those things, and I was just testing them out at home, and I knew that it was not going to be a good day for them. You know, like my expectations were dashed, especially when I raced Julia's old car versus the car I just made, and her car with the broken wheel beat the car that I just made. And it's like, my expectations were destroyed. Like all that time and all that effort, that she put into it. I had just overseen the whole thing, because we never live vicariously through our children. That never happens, not at all. But these things just happen in our lives. And how did Elijah deal with that? Well, what lessons can we learn from Elijah and how he dealt with failed expectations? So this morning I'd like to look at these three people in verse number 1. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done. So first we'll look at Jezebel. She's the one that the message is delivered to. Okay, and then we have Ahab, and he's the one delivering the message. And then we have Elijah, and he's the one that the message is about. So we're going to look at this story in the perspective of all three of these people and kind of see what we can learn from them. So first, Jezebel. Now, how did Jezebel receive the information that happened on Mount Carmel? She wasn't there. She didn't see it. She didn't know what was going on. There was no real-time information. You know, there was no, you know, scrolling updates at the bottom of the screen, say, you know, giving updates what had happened. She didn't know what was going on. Maybe she saw a light, you know, a flash of light in the distance where that fire came down from heaven. Maybe she saw that. But everything she's about to learn, she's going to learn from Ahab, what Ahab is going to tell her. Now, I just wonder what Jezebel thought at that time. Here she is, she's in Jezreel, and what happens? What's happening in Jezreel? It's raining. It's raining. And when's the last time it rained? 3.5 years ago. So what is most likely that she is thinking? Hey, Elijah's dead. Elijah's dead. Baal finally came through. All this prayer, all this effort that I put into this, it's finally come true. Because that's what she believes. She believes Baal is the rain god. She believes is the god of fertility. And finally, he has come through after all of this time. Boy, remember Jezebel? She thought that Elijah was the problem. And Ahab thought the same thing. Remember the beginning of 18 when Ahab meets Elijah? And he says, there you are, he who troublest Israel. And he's like, no, not me. You're the problem. Sometimes we think God's the problem. No, God's not the problem. I'm the problem. I'm the problem. But boy, she didn't believe what was right in front of her. Yeah. I always glue these things together. Jezebel, first thing, we'll look, a couple things about Jezebel. Jezebel rejected the verified communication. She rejected the verified communication. This was verified in, it was raining. The rain had come. Rain was right there. Ahab had completely changed positions. He was a Baal worshiper in the past, but now he has changed. You just think about Ahab. You know, when he first saw Elijah, Remember, Obadiah even was afraid that Ahab would kill him if Elijah had left. He's like, oh no. And then they meet up and you're the problem. And now what do we see in the end of chapter 18 with Ahab? Ahab is there. He's having the celebratory feast with Elijah, and he's obeying. He's submissive to what Elijah has to say. He goes forward into Jezreel as Elijah tells him to do. He's changed. He's humble. His life has changed. You know, that's a great way to show that Jesus is in your life by your life changing. That's the greatest example you can have. I think of the woman at the well. You know, when she's there and she spends some time with Jesus and then she goes back in the city, and boy, everybody notices something different about her. Everybody sees that. The maniac of Gadara, you know, after Jesus comes and spends time with him, and then he goes out throughout the land of Decapolis, and the people are like, wow, there's something different about this guy. We were scared of our lives around him before, but now Jesus has come in and working and ministered in his life. Even Peter, you know, when he sees Andrew comes back in John chapter 1, wow, this is my brother. Boy, his priorities are different. You know, he's going to be following Jesus with his whole life. I've seen a difference in him. The greatest testimony you have is not the words you say, but the life that you live. The life that you live. People see that, and they need to see a change in us. So Jezebel sees this. She sees the rain falling. And what else she sees? She sees Elijah is alive. Elijah is alive, and all the prophets of Baal are dead. All of them, all 450 of them. And what does Jezebel do? She rejects it all. Rejects it all. I see rain. I see my prophets are dead. I see Elijah is still here alive. I don't care. I don't care. This is wrong. Why would she reject that? Why would she reject the verified communication? Because of pride. Because of pride. That's just human nature. Boy, the pride that we have, and it's something that we should be fighting every second of every day that wells up inside of us. We don't want to believe the things that assault us. We don't want to believe the things that humble us. Boy, we don't want to say, I was wrong. I was wrong. Who likes to say that? No, this is what I believe. This is what I've done for so long. She doesn't want to say that. Even though all the evidence is pointing against her, she doesn't want to admit it. She doesn't want to admit it at all. Why was Jezebel's pride so hard to dismantle? Why was it so hard to break down the pride that she had in her life? I think it's for the same reasons that it's hard for us to break down the pride that's in our life. You know, here's a couple of reasons. Because there was a life of early indoctrination. Early indoctrination from a little girl. Probably 3-4 years old, Jezebel had been brought up worshiping Baal, honoring Baal. Whatever feasts and festivals that they had to Baal, she was worshiping Baal her whole life. From a young child, she had been brought up worshiping Baal and honoring him and giving glory to him. She had done this faithfully. And that's so important for us with our children, to teach our young people, because they are so... they can be so easily persuaded into things. Mark 9:42, and whosoever shall offend one of these little ones that believe in me, it is better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he were cast into the sea. It'd be better if you hung a big rock around somebody who's making these young ones to stumble and cast them into the sea than have one of these. Young children, they have such a great capacity to be humble and to believe things. It's so important. And Jezebel, as a young child, had been caught up into that from early indoctrination. And not only that, but there was a pattern of huge investments. You think about some of the things that they did, the temples that she created to Baal. We saw that when she became the queen of Israel, how they had created a temple, had built a temple to Baal. And no doubt that had happened up in Sidon too. And there just worship, these huge investments that she had made in her life were all to Baal. Every investment she had was wrong. Everything. All of these huge, I'm sure they took time, they took a lot of money, they took a lot of resources, a lot of people working into that, and they were all wrong. They were all for waste. It makes me think of the rich young ruler when Jesus said, you know, sell all that thou hast, give to the poor, and follow me. And he's like, No thanks. He was so attached. He had so many things that he did not want to part way with them. What does Jesus say? I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. It insults our pride to think that I can't do it, that I can't do it. My investments are worthless. I have spent so much time and so much effort, and now you're telling me that all this effort I put into this, it's for naught? I can't do it myself? Boy, people like to have a sense of accomplishment. I can do this. You can't do it. You can't do it. No matter as much as we try, as much as we might hope, it's only through Him. It's only through Him that it can be done. Let's see. So all of our investments are worthless. It's only through Him. So there was a life of early indoctrination. There was a pride of, there was a pattern of huge investments. And she had a family that shared her world view. Like, my parents believe in Baal. My mother, my father, they are good people. They are sincere. They care. Even my grandparents, my grandfather and my grandmother, they spent so much time and so much effort, and they cared, and she didn't want to admit that her whole family was wrong. Her whole family was wrong. Baal had been her ticket. Her whole life, since she was the princess of Zidon, everything she had was around Baal, and she didn't want to admit that where she had gotten, everything that she had gotten in her life was wrong. Just null and void, didn't mean anything, it was fake, it was wrong, and she didn't want to admit it, even though all of the evidence around her pointed to that it was wrong, and God is the only God. She did not want to admit that. She rejected the verified communication. She was unwilling to admit what was right in front of her. It was right there, the rain, Elijah, no prophets of Baal. She didn't want to admit any of it. It reminds me of Saul, you know, not the king, but the apostle who becomes Paul. I believe Saul knew that Jesus was the Messiah, and that he was persecuting Christians. And then when he's on the road to Damascus and Jesus humbles him and that light appears, what does he say to him? Hey, Saul, it's hard for you to kick against what I'm doing in your life. I'm pricking your heart and you're kicking against it. It wasn't until Saul was humbled that he could be saved. It wasn't until God could deal with his heart and get rid of that pride that was standing in front of him that he could get saved and be used of God. James chapter 4, draw nigh to God and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. He shall lift you up. Boy, we got to get rid of that pride that just affects people. Everything is pointing, Jehovah is God, and she doesn't want to admit any of it because she's going to go to hell because of her pride. How many times does that happen? And it doesn't even have to be that. Just the pride that we hold in our lives, that should be dealt with, and it's just a stumbling block. It is a terrible thing. So Jezebel rejects the verified communication, and Jezebel resorted to a vengeful course. You know what? She couldn't do anything about the truth. She couldn't do anything about the truth, but she thought she could do something about the truth's messenger. You know, I can't do anything about how God is working, but I can do something about Elijah. I can threaten him. I'm going to come after you, and I'm going to kill you. But you know, you can't destroy truth. Truth marches on. Truth marches on. You know what you can do with truth? People try to do, they try to turn the volume down. They try to stick their head in the sand. I'm just going to ignore it. I'm going to try to get rid of it. You know, what did Herod Antipas do? You know, I'll just kill John the Baptist. I'll just kill him. I'll just get rid of him. Or Saul. What did Saul do? I'll just kill Stephen and so many others. And even Pilate. I'll just get rid of Jesus. You know, I'll just get rid of that. I don't want to hear that. I'll turn it off. I'll turn it down. But truth remains unchanged. Unchanged. It doesn't matter. Even after all of these people died, you know what? The sun came up the next day, and God is still working in people's hearts and in people's lives. Why? So, Brother Frank, you got something? Or?
Yeah, well, what you're saying, you know, truth will make you free, but the Catholics, that's all I could think about when you were talking. My father, my grandfather,
yep.
Yep. Oh, really
yeah.
And I'm okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Just stuck in that. And I don't want to admit that someone in my family was wrong. Yeah, and that'll take people right to hell. Yeah, that's a dangerous thing. I've heard people, I've discussed, I've had same family members say the same thing. Yeah, it's just, you get caught in it and it'll take you right down. And that's it. I'm sorry, I don't want to hear it. This is what I've been told. I don't admit anything else that anybody says. Yeah, it's terrible. She resorted to a vengeful course, and Jezebel retained a vain commitment. In her heart of hearts, she knew that Baal was false. She knew it. She had seen it. If she would just take a moment and realize it, Baal, 450 prophets of Baal died out of the hand of one prophet of God. This can't be right. This can't be right. She was unwilling to give up her power. She was unwilling to give up her control. She was unwilling to give up her position because of pride. Because of pride. I don't want to admit. I want to keep everything that I have. You know, that's what lost people do. They don't want to admit I was wrong. I don't want to admit that everything I've been taught for, you know, 50 whatever years that was wrong. You know, my mother, my father, everybody. This is what I've been taught. My uncles. My dad had two uncles that were Roman Catholic priests. And just that tradition that the family would do. All the money that his family would spend just sending money to the church and buying these relics and praying. And I can't admit that everything was wrong. You have to. You have to get rid of that pride. Lost people don't want to admit that. Pride always says no to God. Always. Always says no to God. So that's Jezebel. Let's look at Ahab. Let's read verse number 1 again. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and withal he had slain the prophets with the sword. Now I believe this was quite possibly the high point of Ahab's life. He's an interesting character because we see him responding humbly and graciously to Elijah, as I mentioned when we first started. He was doing everything right. He was doing everything Elijah wanted him to do, albeit just for a moment. Unfortunately, it wasn't very long. It wasn't until he got home and he talked with Jezebel where we see his initial communication. His initial communication, he started off so well. So well, he started off good. It's like that seed that is cast on the ground, you know, but it lands on hard, stony ground, and it shoots up just for a minute, and then it has no roots, and it withers, and it falls by the wayside. He had every good intention, but as we see the story of Elijah's life, you know what it is? It's a roller coaster. It's a roller coaster, up and down, and I think we could all sympathize with that a bit, understand that. I've experienced some of that in my life, up and down, and well, it'd be nice if things were just even keel all the time, and it was at a good level, you know, like, boy, God even blessing every day. That's not life. That doesn't happen. What we see in Elijah, he wanted to please everybody around him. He wanted to please his wife. He wanted, as we'll see later, he wanted to please Jehoshaphat. He wanted to please himself. He wanted to please, you know, we see him, even when, remember Naboth in the vineyard, and we'll get to this in weeks to come, even when Elijah came and confronted him about that, he was repentant. I'm sorry, that was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. He was good at the beginning, but he never had any follow-through. Never had any follow-through. His initial communication, his eventual compromise. Ahab tells, as we'll see here, this is all we see of Ahab in this passage, right in the beginning where he just tells Jezebel, and then what does Jezebel do? All right, Ahab, all done. That's not what I wanted to hear. Go over there. I'll take over. I'll take charge of this. I'll rectify this situation. Thanks. Why don't you grab these crayons, go sit in the corner and color while I get things back under control here. He allows Jezebel to take over and make the decisions. Go ahead, honey. Go ahead. He was too scared to do it. He was more willing to give people in his life more sway than God. Boy, and that happens so much. He was more willing to give the people in his life more sway than what he would give God. I wonder, who has the greatest sway in your decision making? Is it you? Is it your spouse? Is it your parents? Is it some loved one? Is it God? It should be God. It should be God. Luke 14:26. If any man come to me and hate not his father, that means to favor, okay, it's not hate in like how we would use hate. Hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Hey, if you're going to be a disciple of Jesus Christ, you need to give him the most sway in your life. It's not what I want to do. It's not what my wife wants to do. It's not what my family has planned for me. It's, God, what do you want for me? What do you want from me? Or your whole life you're just going to be chasing, you know, one thing after another. It's easy to say that, but to ask God, what do you have for me? What do you want me to do? So we see his initial communication, his eventual compromise, that's the requirement for discipleship, is giving God the final sway. The greatest danger to a new or repentant believer is the sway of a past relationship. When somebody gets saved or somebody gets right who was out doing wrong and they come back and then that there's that past relationship, that friend, that whatever it is, and they still have an influence on your life and they're still pulling you away. That's going to be a constant thing your whole life. And you're going to have to sever. There's some relationships that you should help prosper, but there's also some relationships that you just need to cut off. Like, you are not going to help me do anything right. I have got to sever this relationship. 2 Corinthians 6:17, wherefore come out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. Sometimes you just got to separate from people because that previous relationship will just hold you down and keep you back from serving God, and you're giving that relationship more sway than what God has in your life. And that's so, so important. Make sure Jesus just isn't the resident of your life, but he's the president of your life. You know, there's your throne. There's a throne in your heart, and who is on it? Is it you or is it Jesus? Jesus shouldn't just have a place in my heart. He should be on the throne of my heart. Everything I do should live, honor and glorify him. I should give him first in everything. Ahab wasn't doing that. He eventually compromised. And then a final calamity. His premature death. You know, how did he die? He died because he was listening to others. And remember we went through the story when we went through the study of Kings with Jehoshaphat, but all these prophets, they're like, yeah, go ahead, go out to battle. And Jehoshaphat smelled a rat, but they still went out. And remember he told Jehoshaphat, I'm going to dress up like one of the common soldiers, but you stay dressed up as the king. Just, you know, because the prophet said that I'm going to die, so why don't you, and then he goes out, they go out to battle. And remember what the Bible says, there was an archer who just, you know, at a chance, you know, drew his arrow and shot and smote Ahab, and he died prematurely. It was a sad demise for a carnal Christian, if you could use that term. So I wonder if you're Jezebel, where you're just through pride just ignoring and denying anything that God has working in your life, or are you Ahab? Just somebody who is compromising through things and not putting God first in your life. Or Elijah. Let's look at verse number 3. And he went and saw, and when he saw that, he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and he left his servant there. Now he ran from up in Jezreel all the way down to Beersheba. That's 95 miles away. 95 miles. That's a long run, you know. He took off as quick as he could. That's about from here to Syracuse away. You know, what does it take, about an hour and a half or so to get there from here? That's a long hike. He goes there, and really that's about as far south in Israel. You know, below that, yeah, there's the Judean wilderness, but actually I got a couple pictures So this is the Judean wilderness. When I say wilderness, it's not, you know, like lions and tigers and bears, oh my. No, it's desert, like this. It's not a nice place to stay, not a nice place to dwell. There's no trees, there's no forest. Oftentimes you'll read in the Bible, from Dan to Beersheba. Well, Dan is furthest up north, and Beersheba is down in the south. So he's going here. Verse number 4. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. So here's a juniper tree. It's not, you don't want to think of like an oak tree or a redwood, something like that. It's more almost like a shrub, you know, than a tree itself. So here he is. He's hanging out under here. Let's finish verse number 4. And he requested for himself that he might die. and said, "It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers." Boy. Verse number 5. "And as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, Arise and eat." Boy, God sends a messenger to Ahab while he's resting under this tree. I think about the previous messenger that he got. Remember the messenger that came from Jezebel and how she just wanted to take away his life from him. But what does this messenger from God do? I want to restore your life. I want to help you. It's a complete contrast between the messenger from Jezebel and the messenger from God. Completely different. let's look at verse number 6. "And he looked, and behold, there was a cake baking on the coals." That's the first evidence of DoorDash, right? We see in the Bible. "And a cruse of water at his head." I think in the Hebrew, was it cruse of water? That's like a Lipton iced tea, right? So a southern iced tea. And he did eat and drink and laid him down again. Verse number 7. "And the angel of the Lord came again the second time and touched him and said, Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee." Boy, what can we learn about Elijah and where he is here? He's come to this place. He's running away from everything. Just a couple of questions about him this morning. When did Elijah run? When did he run? Immediately. Boy, isn't that how we are wired? Fight or flight. Fight or flight. And what did he do? He just took right off. I had a discussion with somebody the other day about this, and this came up, and this is so easy to do. You know what it's so easy to do with Elijah? Boy, Elijah, where's your faith? You know, haven't for the past 3.5 years, you know, God took care of you. He took care of you from the ravens. What's the problem? You know? It's so easy to be down on Elijah. But hey, if it was your face that's on the wanted picture, and who's threatening him? Jezebel. Now, what's her history? Back in chapter 18, verse 4, how many has she killed already of his brethren, of the prophets? She's killed a number. Hey, if you were on death row, if they were hunting you down, might not be so, hey, where's your faith? You know, you're trusting, you're hearing the voice of Jezebel greater than the voice of God? Boy, it's understandable why his faithlessness was understandable. You think about every time Elijah moved, God told him to go stand before Ahab. Then he told him to go to the brook. Then he told him to go up to the widow. Then he said, go down and you're going to meet Ahab again. Now go to Jezreel. Every single time Elijah is moving at the voice of God, except for this time. This time, Elijah is moving at the voice of Jezebel. He's moving at her voice. He went, as soon as she threatened his life, he took off. Every other time. This time, he moved at her voice. So when did he run? Immediately. He took right off. Why did he run? Why did he run? In verse number 3, I'll just read it again. "And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life." He had the fear of dying. He took off for the fear of dying. He did not want to be executed. I don't want my head chopped off. I don't want to be stoned. However they were going to do it, he didn't want any part of that. He wanted to preserve his life. Self-preservation. One reason why he just took off. I believe he also ran because he was experiencing failed expectations. Failed expectations. He thought that day that happened on Mount Carmel would continue into Jezreel and things would be different. He thought that great day where God's glory came down from heaven, hey, things are going to be different now. Ahab's been convinced. He's going to convince Jezebel. The nation's going to turn. But that's not what happened at all. When our expectations don't meet reality, oftentimes we can be frustrated with God himself. Hey, God, what are you doing? I expected this to happen. I thought this was, and why are you doing this? And he was confused. He could have been upset with God. I think about, remember after Jesus died on the cross, and then remember he's walking on the road to Emmaus, and there's the two that are with him there. I just think about those two. All right, Jesus is walking, and he's like, what's the matter? What's the problem? They're like, what are you, a stranger here? Don't you know what's been going on? And then they tell him about Jesus, and you know he was ministering, and he was doing miracles, and we thought he was the Messiah, and now he's crucified, and we're so disappointed. We had such expectations, and we're disappointed for what had happened. Boy, I wonder, if you're in the place where you're just, God, what's going on? I've been working for you. I've been standing for you. I've been trying to serve for you. And what's going on? It doesn't seem like you're helping me. It doesn't seem like you're with me. What's going on? You just have failed expectations. And then lastly, the futility of purpose. Futility of purpose. He says, that's enough. That's enough. I'm done. I am no better than my fathers. I know. What does that mean? That means I'm in the long line of failures. You know, everybody before me has done somewhat to serve God, and look where everything is. Everything's still a mess. The children of Israel are still not following you. Their hearts are not towards you. Oh, I'm not doing anything to help you. This has all been just a waste. So when did he run? Why did he run? And where did he run? Where did he run? As far as he could go. As far as he could go. Reminds me of somebody. Reminds me of Jonah. Remember Jonah, when God calls out to Jonah and gives him a job to do? What does he do? I'm going as far as I can the other way. It's going to, it's like modern day Spain, the end of the known world at that time, trying to get away from everything, trying to get as far away as he can go. But here's Elijah, and he's going to Beersheba. Beersheba. You know what happened in Beersheba? Abraham received a vow. Renewed his vow to God in Beersheba. Isaac received a promise from God. And know what else happened in Beersheba? Hagar. Remember Hagar? Of no fault of her own, was cast out with her son, and she's out there wandering in this wilderness. What did she have? No food, no water. Her son's about to die. And who appears to her? And a messenger of the Lord. A messenger of the Lord, and blesses her, and God shows up and helps her. I wonder if Elijah, I'm sure he knew about the story of Hagar. He's like, God, I need to meet with that messenger. I need to see that same one, and I need some help today. Maybe you just need to see God today. And just, God, I need you. I don't know what's going on. Can you just show up? Can you just show up and minister to me? I need you. I need you to know that everything I'm doing is not a waste, that you want me to go headed the direction I'm going. Well, I think one of the best principles in all of this is God was guiding Elijah even when Elijah was running. Even when Elijah was running, God was guiding him. You know, maybe you're just disappointed with things that have gone on. God, I thought you were going to do this, and it doesn't seem to be working out that way. You know, God still loves you. God still loves you in the wilderness. Even though you've wandered away, God still loves you. He has a place for you. He has a plan for you. Yeah. He has a future for you. He has a purpose for you. You know what Elijah just needed? Just get some rest. Get some rest. Get some strength, and we'll talk. You think about what Elijah has gone through for the last period of time, the last 3.5 years. That's been a difficult time. A difficult time. The stress and the pressure, everything, the famine, the people that are dying around him. That's got to be difficult. You know what? It's easy. And I've heard some preaching on this part. I just wanted to take a little detour. Because you see, Elijah is depressed. Depressed. I don't know if anybody's ever dealt with depression in their life. It is a huge thing in our modern day world. The number of people that are on drugs to help with depression. And maybe you've just gone through times of discouragement. You know, I'm just discouraged. That's just, you know, around here, this time of year, the lack of natural vitamin D that we don't get. I have a guy who sits next to me, and we have this window about that high, about 10, 12 feet high, and sometimes the sun comes up right about here and right in our face. It doesn't happen very often, but thankfully we have some blinds, and, you know, some people complain. I'm like, I'm not complaining. I don't get to see that very often, especially this time of year. Like, hey, yeah, it makes life, we lower them because it's like, oh, I'm going to have a blinding headache in about 3 minutes if I don't. But it's like, you can get depressed or you can get discouraged, but then discouragement can lead to depression. And there's a statistics on the number of people who go from depression to then they think of suicidal thoughts and the number of people that do that. You know, from ages 15 to 34, more people die from suicide than from any other cause. From suicide, especially with what we've been going through with this whole COVID and nobody can go anywhere, nobody can be around anybody. What a horrible, the number of suicides that have happened as a result of that, and it's just a mess. I heard some good preaching on this passage, and I just wanted to bring up some triggers of depression, some triggers of depression, because hey, if it isn't affecting you, you know somebody that it has affected, and if they're not going through it now, somebody will in the future. The first thing, you know what Elijah was? He was fatigued. He was fatigued. He had gone through a long period of time when it was difficult, very difficult. Do you ever just been fatigued? And the littlest thing can set you off. The littlest thing. I have a condition, ulcerative colitis, and they always ask me when I go for an infusion, what's your fatigue level? You know, usually they ask the pain level, you know, because it's just, my body doesn't absorb nutrients the way it should, so it's just like, I'm just tired. You know, I felt that way in the littlest thing. You know, like, you go to get, you put staplers. You know, I need to staple these things together, and there's no staples. Like, where are the staples? Why can't somebody put it in? You know, you go into the fridge to get some milk, just for my Lucky Charms, I just need a little bit, and there's no milk. You know, why can't we have any milk? And you know, it's just right up the road. It's nothing to get upset about, but sometimes the littlest thing, when you're fatigued, the littlest thing can set you off, and we live busy lives. Often we live busy lives, and we get tired. We get fatigued in things. He was fatigued. And you know what? He was fearful. He was fearful. He let his worries consume him. He let his worries consume him. I don't know how long it took to travel from Jezreel down to Beersheba, but it was more than a day, 95 miles, more than a day. Even if he had the fastest horse in the kingdom, which most of them are dead because nothing to eat or drink for the long period of time, that 24 hours had passed. When Jezebel threatened, tomorrow about this time, you're going to be dead. That time had passed. He was well outside of that, but he is not listening to God. He is listening to Jezebel. He is listening to her voice. He was fearful. He ran for his life. And what did he do? He fled. What did he do? He went to Beersheba, and he left his servant there, and then he went a day journey all by himself. He got all by himself, and that's dangerous. That is really dangerous. When you're all by yourself, I don't want to be around anybody. Boy, and the things that can go on in your heart and in your mind during that, and you're just pushing all of these people away. That is a trigger of depression. When you see that, don't be away from people. I know that some people are real, you know, I don't forget the terms, but they like to socialize, a real person, and then there's some who just, like, leave me alone, you know, I'll be out in the cabin in the woods, and when I need to see somebody, I'll come and see you for 15 minutes, talk, and check on the weather, and then I'll go back, you know. Maybe you're like that, but there needs to be interaction with people. There needs to be socializing. There needs to be iron sharpeneth iron. You know, we need to be around Christians and edify each other. That's a help. But then he lost his focus. He lost his focus. Oftentimes when you get in this way, just everything negative. You just dwell on negative, negative, negative. Even, let's say, I'm reading my Bible, and you go to passages that are just depressing, and some, you know, maybe Jeremiah, you're in there, and just, you know, Lamentations, and just things to, you know, stay away from things like that. he's just at his wit's end, and he's focusing on negative things. And what does he say? He says, I'm no better than my fathers. Well, who was asking him? Nobody was asking him, are you better? Look at your father, look what he did. And nobody was comparing him to his fathers. He was just dwelling on the negative things around him. And when you get in this, when you lose your focus, it's, I'll never. A lot of times, I'll never. I'll never get back to how I was. My family will never get back together. My son will never come back to the Lord. My health will never improve. And then when you're in that phase long enough, even little things, I'll never be able to fit in those jeans after eating that ice cream. I'll never be able to. But just, I'll never, and it's just losing your focus. And then lastly, he forgot. He forgot. He forgot the faithfulness of God. He forgot the last 3.5 years, how God had blessed him and provided for him every single step of the way. Every step of the way. God had blessed him and taken care of him, and this threat had come down to church. It's easy for us to say, hey, where's your faith, Elijah? You know, but he had forgot the faithfulness of God. And what did he do? He reached out for treatment. He reached out for treatment. Now, this angel comes and appears to him. Now, look at verse number 5. And as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. I like to think about not only what the angel said to him, but what the angel did not say to him. You know what he didn't say to him? What are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. He didn't give him a sermon. He didn't give him a lecture. He didn't get on his case. He had a message from God. He's like, you know what you need? You need to eat. You need some sustenance. You need to rest. And he rested again. He didn't give him a lecture. He didn't give him a sermon. He gave him what he needed. He gave him some encouragement. And we'll see, and he does that again. Verse number 7, and the angel of the Lord came again the second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee. God had a plan. God had a place. He was preparing Elijah to go. And he's going to, and we'll see this next week. Now, don't read ahead. Don't read your Bibles. Okay? But we'll see next week. You know, we'll see. God says to him, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? And then the conversation that God has with him. But just think about everything that Elijah has gone through. And really, just with this passage and just depression, you know, it is so around us. It is so evident. You know, you don't have to go far. You may not even have to look further than the mirror to see somebody who has dealt with depression. And it's a terrible thing. There's different types of depression. There's clinical depression, and I'm not an expert on it. I've experienced a little bit. I was on prednisone. I think I've given this example a few times. Have you been on prednisone before?
Yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, it can help you. I mean, a lot of people, let's say you get poison ivy. What it really does is it helps inflammation in the body. Any kind of inflammation, it helps bring it down. And they'll prescribe it for so many things. I mean, I had a sinus infection, and they didn't want to give me an antibiotic. So they gave me prednisone to help get down the inflammation so I could breathe better. I'm like, that's okay. I know the side effects of it. But, you know, when you're on, and this is the horrible part of it, when you're on poison ivy or something, that's maybe a 7 or 10 day treatment. When I'm on it for a flare-up, it's 3 months, a minimum 3 months. And there was a time, it was like a year and a half, I was almost on it the majority of the time. And boy, the littlest thing, you know, the stapler thing that I was doing, right? Lock me up in the attic. You don't want to be anywhere. Boy, the things that, and then I remember a couple times, it gets squirrely in your head and you think, you want to be good in the morning. You wake up and you don't know if you're Tigger or if you're Eeyore,
yep.
You know? And you're like, I want to be Tigger, but I might be Eeyore. And you don't like have a lot of control over that. And you want to, but you don't know. What am I going to be today? And it's a real thing in some people's lives. I heard about a young man who his parents got divorced he was 3 years old, and his mother really couldn't get off the couch for like a month. And people from the church came and helped. And if it wasn't for those people, his mother, like I can't get up. She was just so depressed about what had gone on. And it's out there. And this is a great example for somebody who got depressed. And then what did they do? Just, they were ministered by God. And they were helped. God came and admitted, hey, you need some rest. You need some encouragement. You need some sustenance. And if we see somebody in that situation, try to be a help with them. Don't let them get alone. Don't let them be by themselves. Be a help to them. Steer them towards positive things. Don't even if they're in their Bible, and steer them to positive things that they can get back to God, that they can get out of that. Sometimes it's like a chemical thing. Sometimes it's just your head is in the wrong way. You're just focused on yourself oftentimes. But just, hey, help people get out of that. It's a terrible thing, yeah. A terrible, terrible thing. So, all right, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for this morning. Lord, thank you for this passage. Lord, thank you for this real life example of things that happen every day around us. Lord, help us to take heed. Help us to learn. Help us to follow you. Help us to grow closer to you. I thank you for Elijah. Lord, thank you for just ministering to him when in a time of despair, Lord, when his expectations were destroyed. I pray that you'd bless us this morning. Lord, bless everything that happens here, that it would only give you the honor and glory. Lord, thank you for being so kind, loving, and forgiving. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.